Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Personal finances are on everyone's mind, whether it's if you're making money on your investments, what to do before the end of a tax year, and many more issues. Well, we're going to discuss these things with Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial. Joe, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley.
Now, let's talk about, first off, certified financial planner. You and I have done programs before, and you've talked to us and our audience about why that title is really important. Would you share that with us?
Sure. It's really the comprehensive credential in the financial planning industry, if you will, because it indicates that an advisor has learned about all the main topics of personal finance, from basic things all the way through estate planning.
Now, it doesn't mean somebody who doesn't have that title doesn't know a lot, but what it does for consumers is to give them a level of comfort so that if you're starting out with someone new, you know what you're going to have some idea of the knowledge level. Would that be?
Sure.
Okay.
It was really the impetus behind the program to begin with, was to let consumers know that they're dealing with somebody that's knowledgeable in many different areas.
And this is a national program, right?
It is.
So certification would mean the same here as it does in California.
It is. It does.
Okay. Let's go on from there. And one of the things that we were talking about, we always consider, are we doing the right things? Now, I know you're not a tax expert, but you are very knowledgeable about what consumers should do in terms of their finances and figuring out what to do by the end of the year and all that sort of stuff. So looking ahead, what would you advise consumers to start considering? Gifts, donations, moving money around? What are you, not hiding it, I'm not implying that. We don't want to hide the money. What would you recommend to consumers that they do to manage their finances by the end of the year?
Well, there's a lot of things in a lot of different areas, and particularly lately with a lot of the changes that have occurred. But firstly, just to say it, if somebody has a tax advisor, they might want to go ahead and talk to them,
sure.
get on their appointment book near term here as we approach the end of the year. You know, new tax laws went into place in 2013. Now, as it turns out, they didn't affect a lot of folks. They affect a certain number of folks, but you may not know unless you go ahead and talk to your tax advisor. In terms of typical things that we would think of towards year end, you actually brought up a couple. Are there charitable contributions that you'd like to make? If it's of, let's say, an appreciated stock, a stock that's gone up a lot in value, you can't do that overnight. It takes planning. It takes a number of days to work that out logistically. So you don't want to wait till the last minute.
Given the fact that we agree you're not a tax expert, but is there an advantage to giving a stock that has gone up in value considerably to one that's kind of slugging along?
Traditionally, it's considered to be advantageous in that if you know that you're going to give a charity a certain value, and if you gave them a cash value, you're not really avoiding any tax hit. Whereas if you give them that same value in the form of a stock that if you sold it yourself, you'd otherwise be paying taxes on.
I see. So there is an advantage for consumers to think about.
Sure.
In terms of planning.
For those that are fortunate enough in a position
money.
To be able to do that. Right.
Right. Exactly. Always nice to say, well, I'm making money here. Okay, what about other things? What about making donations to your children, the things that you can give outright?
So there's rules about how much you can give to non-spouse beneficiaries of gifts. The trend has been the last several years that the dollar amounts you can give each year have been trending higher little by little. But as we approach year end, if a family wants to do something like that, they could consider, if they haven't already, give some money to children, adult or otherwise, and then turn around and do it again early next year since a new calendar year will have flipped over.
I see.
Here again.
So you're limited to the amount you can give without tax implications.
Right. And here again, it's both because you'd want to talk to your tax advisor about this and because it's situation specific. You know, we're only generalizing here, but it's definitely something that is a year-end type of topic. As are many topics year-end do relate to taxes. And we can talk more about that. But there's also other things, too. I find that towards the end of the year is a good time to work on a budget because you have the data that is, you know, on your budgeting that's run all year long. You've gone through a full cycle of the seasons and so forth. And you can kind of use the data from this year to take a look at what's 2014 going to look like and how you want your budget to look.
Okay. And this, of course, is the time to start planning. How much money are you putting in your children's college fund? What are all those things that you're doing? Are there ways to put money into funds for, like, kids' college, much like an IRA, for example, where you can shelter the money from taxes for a period of time? Are there funds that you can put for your kids' college that's going to protect it from taxes?
There have been, over time, various vehicles that have been allowed for in the tax code mm-hmm. that give tax advantages. And the most, I would say, popular one the last several years is called the 529 college savings plan mm-hmm. that comes from the tax code that allows for that. And the way it works is it's potentially tax-free income on the earnings that you earn inside the account federally and potentially tax-free statewide as well, depending on how you operate the account.
Uh-huh. So check with your financial your tax planner to see the best way to do that. But that is something to consider if you're looking at doing it. And I assume there's a limited amount you can put in each year?
The limits are actually fairly high.
Okay.
And here again, we'll talk generally, but there's a general rule that allows you to contribute 5 years' worth of the gifts we were just talking about before mm-hmm. all at once into a 529 plan on behalf of a beneficiary.
So you could put a sizable hunk of money in there if you have it available. And then how does that affect the person who's making the contribution? It's money that's already been taxed, I gather, but it's saving the earnings, what you earn on that money, if you can earn something, between the time that you put it in and the time that it's utilized.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. I mean, that can be, and it could grow, and why not have a fund like that? I think that's a great idea. So you need to check, though, with your tax person to see how to do it.
Financial advisors like myself help with those plans a lot,
okay.
and usually, hopefully, in conjunction with the tax advisor. The other thing I would simply add to that is I always want to make sure we don't overemphasize one particular idea.
Oh, yes,
I agree. So there should be tax diversification even within the context of saving for college.
Okay. All right. So there are other things that you can find out there. All right. So what about other things? What you're looking at your stock and you're trying to decide what are the ramifications if you sell it now, if you move it, if you buy new stock? I mean, truthfully, I'm not that much of a knowledgeable on managing finances. What do you need to consider as the end of the year approaches?
Well, you'd think about how has the year gone for you tax-wise? How much income have I accrued so far this year that's going to be reflected on my tax return, and what categories do they fall into? And then again, hopefully with the help of someone, you can start to see what moves you should make before the end of the year, either to try to make your net taxes less than they otherwise would be, or to simply not exacerbate them further by mm-hmm. doing something that would be counterproductive.
Oh, yeah. So that's where you need to really know what's going on and what your moves are going to have your implications. Yeah, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial, and we're talking about your money and my money I want to accumulate. All right. So we're looking at strategies as year-end approaches. There are a number of things that you can do and all of that. All right. Now, how is moving? Moving is something that if people have a move in the future, does that impact on what you do before the end of the year? Let's say you're moving next January, February, and you already know where you're going. You're in the process of selling your house. Are there considerations in there?
Sure, there could be. Now, it's probably not likely, but possible you'd actually have a capital gain when you sell your house.
Mm-hmm.
If you live closer to cities, you may have seen bigger appreciation. But there's a lot of sheltering these days of capital gains when you actually go to sell your house.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it still could be a taxable event. And you'd want to, here again, figure out, is it better to sell the house in 2013 versus 2014?
That's right. That would depend on when you settle on the house, right? When actual payment and transfer of title is made?
I'm going to punt on that one as far as it, because there's different.
It's not your area.
There's different dates involved, and I just don't want to say something that could be misconstrued.
Sure.
But the other part of it is, in terms of moving, obviously, is depending on where you live, you may or may not be subject to state income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Florida's famous for the way that they give breaks to folks on state income taxes.
Right.
Maryland, not so much. You know, Virginia's sort of in the middle. DC's kind of high. And other parts of the country have different levels of taxation. So you'd want to look at the impact of that.
The big picture. You're looking at the big picture of what. And I suppose, too, let's suppose you're selling your house because you're retiring and you're going to retire next year, which was probably going to mean that you're going to have a drop in income. So that might be the time you'd want to consider doing this instead of doing it this year.
Yeah, if there were aspects of your move that created taxable events, i.e. you needed to sell some more assets to come with the cash to buy the next house, that sort of thing, then by all means, you'd want to, here again, tabulate what 2013 looks like. The other thing I will say just broadly is that 2014 thus far looks like it's going to be fairly similar to 2013 in terms of the law. Because we had such substantial changes in different parts of the tax law coming into this particular calendar year, it just makes it that much less likely it would happen again. Now, I'm not to say it won't.
Yeah, you don't know, do you?
Just in terms of best guesses here at this time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving on that premise. All right. Okay, great. Now, let's kind of change directions here and talk about you put your money into investment instruments. How do you know what you're really getting? Now, you put out a recent newsletter to which I subscribe, or however you want to call it, and you talked about the fact that whether or not you're getting an, and I'm going to have to read the terminology because it escaped me. And when I read it, I said, I want to ask you about this. That was the difference between nominal return and real return. What are those things, and what do I need to know about it?
Well, this tells me that majoring in economics in college is actually coming back to really help, because one thing that's basic to economics is the understanding the impacts of inflation, and that simply put, inflation is the difference between nominal and real returns. So, for instance, if your money is earning 5%, but the cost of living is going up 3%, the purchasing power, the usefulness of that money is really only growing at 2%.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, how is that important? Well, I can see how it would be important in your planning and what you're going to be doing, because you're going to realize how much money you really are making. Does that make a difference in your investment instruments?
Well, it should. In other words, if you develop a long-term plan for your investment portfolio geared towards what your ultimate needs will be, you have to factor in the additional cost of living when you start drawing on those resources. Or if you're currently in the process of drawing on those resources but still hope to live for a while, you still need to look ahead and see what the impact of inflation will be. So there's different levels of affordability. Some folks need to be actually a little more aggressive to make the numbers work. Others can afford to be a bit more conservative. Either way, you're going to be impacted by inflation. So you just have to factor in the cost of living.
Well, it really is giving you a more realistic view of where you are financially. I guess that's part of what you're saying.
And what steps you need to take today to make sure that inflation is not too counterproductive to your planning.
All right. Now, what would you do? What would you tell your clients
to do? Well, the first thing is we have to understand what's truly conservative and what isn't. In other words, if some folks tend towards only wanting to place monies in instruments that are guaranteed, guaranteed instruments, generally speaking, tend to have less upside. Therefore, they'd be more impacted by inflation.
But they don't have any downside, except that you're not earning as much.
But also that if you do too much of that, I mean, now again, the situation could be maybe you can afford to be that conservative. But if the challenge is inflation, you know, if you're earning 1% in the bank and inflation's 3%, you're losing 2% of your purchasing power.
That doesn't add up, does it?
My favor. You do it year in and year out, and it just tells us being too conservative can be counterproductive.
Okay, so that is something really to take in consideration as to how you're investing your money.
Yeah, it inflation causes us to not take risk unnecessarily, but to acknowledge the usefulness of taking some risk.
A little more, because otherwise you're not even going to stay even is what it amounts to.
Sure.
You're on a treadmill and you're going backwards.
We haven't had really high inflation for years, although I know a lot of the times when I talk to clients about that, there's a little bit of eye rolling because you look at, say, medical costs going up or particular types of our budgets go up a lot. But broadly speaking, you know, there's a lot of things that haven't gone up that much and for various reasons. But we've been the government stated inflation rate for the last 10 years has been annualizing at less than 3%. That's not too bad.
Is that atypical?
I would say that longer term, we've been around normal to slightly below normal on the inflation front.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. It's one less major problem than we have had to deal with. Now, there's a lot of things coming out of Washington these days, particularly the Federal Reserve, that gives us pause about, well, maybe we'll be having possibly higher levels of inflation in the future. You know, that's speculated about every day in the markets because mm-hmm. interest rates on the short end or shorter term interest rates have been affected, let's say, by the actions of the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm. And stock goes up and down and up and down. Oh, if you look at it too much, it'll drive you crazy. I'm surprised you still have your sanity, Joe. Let's take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Off Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He is a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial, and we're talking about money, of course. Now, we were talking about the stock market going up and down and what was coming, and you're saying that there are some changes that perhaps coming down the pike from the Fed that's going to make a big difference in this. Can you illuminate this a little bit?
Well, the trillion-dollar question basically for a while now has been at what point – To put it simply, do they stop priming the pump so much? They stop pumping so much money mm-hmm. into our economy and let it grow a little bit more organically without that artificiality. With the thought being, they have to. You know, they can't necessarily pump this level of money
in. You can't keep doing that forever.
Forever. And there's inflation implications associated with it longer term. The more money they pump it in, mm-hmm. presumably the less value a dollar is. That's simple inflation. It will go less far when buying things. And we've never really done this before in this country like we're doing it now. So it's a playbook that we're not familiar with.
It's a little nervous-making, huh?
Well, and it's one of the reasons periodically we've seen over the last few years the market seize up because they don't know how this unwinds. And capital gets scared at times, and it creates overemphasis on certain assets that when they turn around and start getting sold, it creates kind of a stampede.
Mm-hmm.
The European Central Bank in Europe is taking actions that are similar to what we've been doing. So globally, there's a lot of money being pumped into economies.
And that causes concerns about the global market as well, I would assume, when that stops, if the pump is not keeping primed, we don't keep it primed, then it's going to have serious implications worldwide.
So the hope is that it's unwound over time in a fashion that's not particularly disruptive.
Slowly.
And that organic economic growth picks up the slack and we don't feel a lot of pain from what's happened the last several years.
Which means we would have to see an increase in business, seeing businesses growing, developing, being established, and that sort of thing. Would that be
sure.
part of it?
Exactly. Yeah. Sure.
And unfortunately, that's not the climate we're in right now.
We've had a pretty slow recovery from the financial crisis period in terms of economic growth relative to other periods of slowdown since World War II.
And that's since, 2008?
Right.
That we're really talking about when
right.
the market just took a dive.
Yeah. The second half of 08, particularly September into December, was sort of the scariest period from a headline standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're 5 years removed from that, and we've been kind of eking along, but with a lot of help from money being pumped into the system.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the concern then. Well, how do you plan for that as someone who's looking to their future? Let's suppose that you're a younger individual whose retirement is way down the road. What do you consider when you're looking at how to invest, or what are you going to do if the Fed does start putting less and less money into the economy? How do you do that? How do you adjust to it? I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I hope you do.
Well, there are certain levers that seem to work regardless of what the challenges are when it comes to stewarding money and capital. One is diversification.
Mm-hmm.
Another is flexibility. And another is emotional preparation. Just know that we have had recently and we will continue to have periodically, periods of time where the markets get really scary.
A little roller coaster. They're good. Yes.
Just prepare for that emotionally. I tested it out some number of years ago with each client where we said, what if this part of your portfolio, let's say it was the stock part of the portfolio, fell in half and the other part of your assets fell by certain amounts. Mm. So you went from a certain value to a much lesser value and sort of walk through the emotional aspects of that, the logistical aspects of that if you're actually starting to draw on your resources and prepare folks for that. And everybody's a little different. Some folks look at it and say, well, I'll be fine. Others say, no, you know, what is the probability of something like that happening? Even if it's remote, I still want to take action to sort of sidestep it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then get diversification and flexibility. You know, diversification we've talked about on the show before.
I understand
before.
Diversification, but what about flexibility?
Flexibility is there are ways to place monies into investments these days where the managers of the investments have a little more discretion as to what how much risk they need to take at any given time.
To and kind of stay level with the world.
If you find the right players to fill that role, then you can do a little bit better at mitigating some of the downside.
Boy, this takes a lot of study and a lot of effort and a whole big lot of help, at least for me.
And a lot of planning.
Right.
But there are tools out there that can be used, you know, where the themes are the ones that we're discussing.
I should tell our listeners, you are my financial planner. You also work with Call for Action, our nonprofit organization. Just as a purpose of disclosure, you're not getting paid to come here.
Right.
Sorry, Joe.
No surprises.
No surprises there. No surprises. But so the bigger thing here is, I guess what you're saying is you have to look ahead and think it's almost a worst case scenario is what you're talking about.
Well, what the pumping of the money into the system, the Federal Reserve buying Treasury bonds as they're issued and so forth, is an effort to prevent a worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now it becomes, what are the consequences of the medicine? You know, what are the side effects of the medicine?
Because you may develop an allergy to it.
Well, yeah, or a dependency.
Even more likely, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it is interesting, and I think that what you've so clearly pointed out is there's so much involved in it that I wouldn't even know where to begin on my own to look at this stuff. But that's why you go to school and why you're a certified financial planner. Okay, closing words. We just have about a minute or so. Anything you want to say to our listeners?
Well, I would say that there's a lot of things to be thinking about as we head into the end of the year. So don't procrastinate.
You know,
Prioritize one or two or three areas of personal finance. Talk to your advisor. If you don't have one, think about getting one. Or if you advise yourself, then you know set time aside on weekends and so forth to get it done.
Right.
Do a little bit at a time, but there's a lot of different areas that there's a lot of things changing. As I said before,
it's a lot of work. You really are going to have to school yourself in terms of changes that have been made and what you need to do. And that's, I'm sure there are a lot of tools available and certainly the internet, but you have to be careful there that you're going to a good, reliable source.
Sure. There's a lot of information out there.
Yeah.
Which raises more questions. So it's
that's
a matter
right.
of prioritizing the questions.
You got it, Joe. Thank you so much. You've been a delightful guest. We've been talking with Joe Hemsley, who's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise Financial. You've been listening to Off Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.